welcome to another edition of Live on Tape with Pete Tribuco at WWDB AM 860 Talk Radio, Philadelphia, a Beasley Media Group station. I'm Pete Tribuco along with my buddy over there, Josh Applebaum, right? Is that right? Did I say your name right?
Yes, you did.
I did.
How are you doing this morning?
Still dry? Oh, it's crazy. I mean, just getting into, of course, on Saturdays, it's always crowded here in Philadelphia, but the traffic was amazing. And somehow I lost an hour, Josh. I don't know how I did that. I mean, I set the clock. I looked at the clock, I drove, and I knew I had about an hour and 10-minute ride to get here. And when I looked at the clock again, and I'm looking at it, I'm saying, wait a minute, I lost an hour. I think I was abducted by aliens, Josh, I really do. I think I literally was abducted by aliens, and they only wanted to keep me for an hour. So it must have been like they really weren't happy with me or something, because normally when that happens, they keep you longer than an hour. But they were like, I think we got some other people we want to talk with, you know, and do experiments on, because I lost the hour. I lost the entire total hour, and I could not believe that was the case, but that was the case. So tell me something. Now, I know you like what? Soccer, right? That's your sport. That's the sport that you like, right?
Correct. Now, I was about to say, if they let you go after an hour, maybe it was the rookies on duty, the new guy.
Okay. So yeah, bottom line is, now, did you ever play soccer?
Left wing and left halfback.
And really, so how far did you get with it? I mean, how far did you go?
High school, and then I quit when I started my first year of college.
Okay. Yeah, it was a little too tough in college, right? Yeah, no, well, soccer's a tough sport, especially for the midfielders. I don't know if you know, but the midfielders do like 5-6 miles a game, and there's no stopping. I played football, baseball, and I played a little tennis in college on the teams, and somehow got an education. But when they asked me to do lacrosse or soccer, I was like, those are too tough. They're just way too tough, because you got to travel and you got to run speed and stuff. Now, how about sports like boxing? Do you ever follow boxing at all?
Muhammad Ali, the greatest, but that was about it.
Oh, really? Well, you know, I mean, there's a whole bunch out there. And it's funny you should mention that. You know, obviously, we have got one of the greatest that played, okay, that actually fought. And of course, professional boxer, competed from 1979 to 2003, two-time, not once, but two-time world heavyweight champion, having held the WBC title in 84 and the WBA title in 1986. He also, I guess, beat heavyweight champion Greg Page, James Smith, Tony Tubbs, Frank Bruno, and, you know, cruiserweight when he was that, Al Cole. And also, he actually, when it gets Larry Holmes. Now, I'm sure you know Larry Holmes. I mean, you know.
Who doesn't?
But the thing is, you know, he basically, and you know, I saw that match, okay? And no offense, okay, I've been following Timothy's career, and I can tell you, I think he beat Larry Holmes. It was that close. So without further ado, we have former heavyweight champion Tim Witherspoon. Tim, how are you doing today?
Very good. Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Well, thank you.
What an entrance.
Well, listen, hey man, you deserve it. You deserve it. You have an incredible career. You know, and it's funny.
Thank you.
Josh, when we did something with Timothy, I took a picture with him, and it's like I'm a dwarf. You know, I'm like a midget.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sitting there looking up at him, and we had to get a wide picture, because if it was a close up, you would have saw Timothy's head and shoulders and the top of my head. That's about it. So we literally had to move the camera back, way back. And I think I was on my tippy toes too, Timothy, when we took that picture. And I was like, you know, and it's on Facebook. If you guys want to see it, it's on Facebook, but it's the funniest thing. And your arms, Timothy, is as big as my leg. Okay. So it was great to have you on. That was way back when,
yes.
But, so now tell us about your career. Tell us about the incredible career that you had, which started, I guess, 1979.
Yeah.
So tell me about your career. Tell me how you got started.
Yeah.
How did it all happen?
Well, first, let me tell you about before that. I used to play tennis. I played soccer.
Okay.
I was a right half back.
Okay.
I used to go out to Cheltenham with my big brother, my big Jewish brother, Peter Iskin, who's a lawyer now.
Sure.
He used to teach me tennis and everything. I went to summer camp, Jewish Golden Slipper and everything. And then I played boxing. So I love those sports too. The tennis, I could play tennis. And I was a right halfback in soccer.
So do you still play tennis?
No, but I would like to do that because I'm doing a lot of other training just in case a exhibition. George Foreman's not coming back, but he talked about it. But if there's anybody out there that's up on that level that's going to do exhibitions, I'm ready. I've been training every day, so that's what I've been doing now. Just staying in shape and just in case something like that happened. That's what I'm doing now.
That's really great. Looking at your record, man, 69 total fights, 55 wins,
yeah.
38 by KO, and one draw. Just an amazing career that you had. And it's got you down here at 6'3 and a half. You are not 6'3 and a half. You are taller than 6'3 and a half, or I've shrunk.
No, I'm 6'3. I'm not 6'3 and a half. I'm just 6'3.
Yeah. You know, I like to get that half inch in myself. I don't know about Josh over here, but I always get that half inch in. So I'm like 5'8 and a half when I'm really not, you know? And Josh, you're tall, right? You're a big guy.
5'7", but it's the measure of the man.
Could you imagine if you were in the studio? Now, last time you were in the studio, this time it's obviously a phone call. Could you imagine hanging out with two short guys like us, you know, and that thing? He could put his arms around our shoulders and it would still be like, forget about it. I mean,
remember, there's taller guys than me that's boxing and everything also.
Yeah, this is true.
Yeah.
So you were heavyweight. Nickname was Terrible. You were Terrible.
Yes.
Now I met you, and, you know, the folks here in Philadelphia, you're a Philadelphian, right? You're from Philadelphia?
South Philly, right near the Italian Market.
Exactly.
You know Sylvester Stallone, they made the movie down there.
Yes.
Right? My mom, real quick. My mom used to take me to the Italian Market, just like Sylvester Stallone did in the movie. We used to buy groceries. She used to take my siblings there with me. We used to wave and say hi to everybody. And then I went on to become, you talking to the real and the two-time heavyweight champ from Philly, Rocky Balboa. But in real life,
it was you. It was you. That you were the person going around in the morning with the sweatpants on.
Yep.
Now, did you have a dog named Buckus? Huh?
No, I have 10 siblings, but I live with 8. It was kind of hard. It was kind of rough.
Okay.
So, 8 siblings living in one house. 10 so, people.
And this is South Philly, right? We're talking South Philly.
South Philly.
Yeah. So that must bring back a lot. Did you have turtles? I mean, I know Rocky had turtles.
No, we didn't have no animals in the house. We didn't have no animals. I don't remember seeing a dog at one time, and then he disappeared. That was it.
Oh, really?
Somebody must have stole a dog or something.
Oh, that's horrible.
Or got hit by a car.
That's horrible.
South Philly.
You know, you should complain. You should go over to Sylvester and say, look, buddy, all right, you were doing my life here, okay? I'm the person, you know, okay? And you should have got some recognition, and basically something like, well, it's based on a true story, you know, from a guy, exactly, Chuck Webner, right? You know, but actually, it's a combination of Chuck Webner, who, by the way, as we know, did not knock Muhammad Ali down. He stepped on his feet, hit him, and then Muhammad went down. He tripped.
He made Muhammad mad. Boy, Muhammad got up and started going crazy on him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, put his feet down there. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no. I want you to talk, man. You're the man of the hour here. You're the man of the hour. No, I'm just going to say, like I said, I followed your career since you first started. You know, you're Philadelphian. You know, Philadelphia loves you. This is your home. You've lived here your life. You got this. I did listen to your podcast.
100%.
Yes, you are. And I did listen to the podcast last night. Okay. And I tell you, you're talking about boxing. You really should think about going like on HBO or Showtime and ended up being like an announcer or a color commentary for those events. I think you'd be fantastic. You know, because your background and your knowledge of the sport is first rate, and you speak well. You know, basically, I think you'd be great. So maybe I'll be your manager. Who knows? Maybe you can.
I just gotta practice. See, you're really sharp. You spitting the words out. You spitting a lot of things out like you're talking. I just gotta practice because I just be training all the time. I'm training these kids from Bangladesh and Egypt.
Sure.
I take them to the gym, but. You know, doing these interviews, I just got to get involved. I got to get more involved in it so I can be sharp like you. You really sharp.
No, I'm not sure. When I spit out stuff, poor Josh has got to get out of the way because the spit comes out of my mouth and, you know, goes through the glass and hits Josh in the head over there. So, you know, what he does is he actually puts a little thing up there. So, but that is so cool. That is so cool.
Yeah.
Right? Anyways.
I'm blessed, man.
I know you are. You are blessed. And, you know, we'll talk about your family. And the last time you were in the studio, you brought your daughter in, which was really cool. All the travel that you did. But I think we got one minute, Josh. Did you say 1 minute or how much time before? Oh, 3 minutes. Okay. So let's talk. We got a little time. Three minutes. All right. So now we'll get to the Larry Holmes match later on. But you first started. How did you get into it? What prompted you to leave tennis, to leave soccer, and to get into boxing?
Well, I had a scholarship. I was a tight end. I went to South Philadelphia High. That was an Italian neighborhood. I got a scholarship, and my marks wasn't that good enough to go to a big college, so I was going to a small college first. And I started as a freshman. You know, as soon as I went and started, I was pretty good. I was all-city tight end, and my goal was to be a professional football player.
Okay.
But then I got hurt. Yeah, then I got hurt and came home, and that's when boxing started.
And who got you into it? I mean, is it kind of like Mickey with Rocky? You know, Mickey came by and said, "Hey, you know, hey, listen, man, I think we could do something with you, Tim." You know, no.
No, there was another boxer in the neighborhood. There's Kenny Reese and Buster Drayton. Buster Drayton went on to become the junior middleweight champion of the world. And Earl Hargrove, he was a junior middleweight. And Buster, I think, was a middleweight. So they were going to the gym. And I was like, I was with my friend Keith Davis, who was an all-Philadelphia, all-state tackle. We grew up together. So we decided to go to the gym with Buster Drayton. We walked right near the Italian Market. Right, that's where the gym was. We walked there. It's called the Old Paschunk Gym. And we went there, and then from there, went on to become heavyweight champ. We started. Sports was my life. I didn't want it to end, so it just picked up in boxing.
And really? Yep. And I'm looking at this. Basically, you had 6 amateur bouts, losing 7. The last to Marvis Frazier,
yep.
On decision after getting knocked down. I don't see how anybody could have knocked you down. Okay.
I was off balance.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Seriously.
I think you were definitely off balance, I think, at that point. So,
I was dancing. I was moving around like Muhammad Ali a little bit, and I leaned back, and he caught me off balance. He caught me, slapped me, caught me off balance, and went down. I wasn't hurt or anything, you know. But then when I turned professional, a lot of those guys they didn't want to fight me when I turned professional.
Well, you were pretty pissed. I mean, you were pretty upset with them, you know?
But they were fighting years before me. Here I am, a guy just coming in, and I'm fighting Joe Frazier's son. I come in for 5 months, and I'm fighting somebody that had like 20 fights, you know?
Okay.
And I did pretty good. I did good. So here's a new guy. I come in, bam, I'm fighting Joe Frazier's son, you know? So I picked up with the sports really fast.
Well, like I said, I would say that it's a Muhammad Ali thing. You just tripped, okay? That's what happened there. We are talking with, the boxing legend, WBA and WBC world champion Tim Witherspoon, and we'll be back with Live on Tape with Pete Tribuco right after this. Each year, 5,000 people, including children, choke to death. LifeHack can stop these senseless tragedies. It's so easy to use also. Simply place the mask over face, push and pull. You'll never regret having a LifeHack in your home or office. Please visit LifeHack.net. today to protect you and your loved ones. Or you can call them at 877-LIFE-VAC. That's 877-LIFEVAC.
Alana was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma, and it's cancer. As a parent, when you're told this type of news, you're going to do whatever you can do for your babies. When we got to St. Jude is when I realized that, no, you're not going to get a bill for anything. I don't have to worry about it. They're saying we're going to help save her, and we're not going to charge you anything. This is what we do.
St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Finding cures. Saving children. Learn more at stjude.org.
And we are back to Live on Tape with Pete Tribuco and, of course, my amazing producer over there, Joss Applebaum, who's like, well, this was going to be a really dreary day. It's you know, kind of not that nice here in Philadelphia. And we're looking around, and he's like, what? Oh, wow, real boxer? Man, I tell you something. So we really got, we have former boxing great, and he's still great, by the way, Tim Witherspoon, who was professional boxer, competed from 79-2003, two-time, not once, but two-time heavyweight champion, having held the WBC title in 84 and the WBA title in 1986, beating such heavyweight world champions like, Greg Page, James Smith, Tony Dubs, Frank Bruno, and of course, welterweight Alfonso Ratliff. I believe that's his name, and Al Cole. So he's come a long way since then. I mean, you got to see him, folks. Okay. You're 2 years older than me, it looks like, Tim. I think I'm 64.
65.
You're 65. You look at us in the
66 in December. Yeah. In December.
Josh, you look at us in the same room together. It's not even a before and after picture. Okay. What I mean? I mean, he's got muscles. Okay. You are like, you could still be in your 30s. Okay. I looked at this guy.
Thank you.
He's in great. And here I am, my pot belly sticking out, drinking beer and watching TV and, watching the boxing matches and stuff along those lines. And by the way, my dad was a big fan of yours as well. My dad loved boxing.
Okay.
My dad, God rest his soul, he died at 92. He loved several things. He was a Marine Corps guy from World War II. And if you remember Marines, part of their training was boxing. Part of their training was actually going up and boxing so they can defend themselves. All right. And he went to Paris Island in, I guess, 1943 or 44, and basically went there. And he was a little guy. Okay. He's like me. He's like 5'7", 5'8", somewhere around that. Maybe weighed 140, 150, maybe 160 pounds, but most likely 140, 150. Right. And he was like the boxing champ. He went up against people that were twice his size. And
I hated to fight small. I hated to fight those little guys. I actually lost. I lost to a, I hate those little guys, man. Woo.
And why is that? Why? Why?
Oh, man. Well, this guy, I forgot his name, but he was tough. But I did underestimate him a little bit. He just stepped to me. Every time I banged him, he stayed in my chest. And they stay close to you. So when you're fighting a taller guy, you don't supposed to be on the outside because you get eaten alive. And he was all in my chest. That's where you're supposed to be. Joe Frazier was inside all the time. And, you get eaten alive if you stay on the outside. So, oh, man. Dwight Muhammad Kwawi, I sparred with him. He stayed inside. And they like little, they just stay in your chest. And you just got to learn how to fight these guys. They tough.
I'm sure they are tough. So I got to ask this, Tim. Upcoming boxers who are still training, what strategies would you recommend when they're doing their training regimen for like upcoming bouts with small guys, like you just said? What's the most effective strategy in terms of training? How would you suggest they go forward?
Okay. Just fighting shorter guys or just fight? I did a lot of chopping wood when I was in Don King's camp. No, when I was in Muhammad Ali's training camp too.
Uh-huh.
What we did early in the morning was everybody got up early and we ran like 4 miles. And then we came back and Lana Shabazz, who was Ali's cook. I'm sure everybody know her. I know that name.
Uh-huh.
She would cook for us. So we would go in and eat breakfast. Then we would rest up for like half an hour. Then we would go in the back, everybody, about 20 of us, 15 of us, chop wood for about an hour. And then we would go back and rest. right? And wait 3 hours and go to the gym and train boxing, sparring, and hitting the bags, right? And then go eat dinner. And then some of the guys that have to make weight would probably go and do another exercise after dinner. You know, the smaller guys, like they got to make weight. Some of them would do a light exercise, but the majority of us would just relax after the last dinner. So, but there's a lot of this. A lot of the boxers had different methods, different things. They would do different type of, like when I first was boxing, the trainer didn't want you to lift weights, you know, and then the new generation, everybody was pumping the weights, but the old timers didn't really want us lifting weights. And now the Vander Holyfield, Mike Tyson come along with their power.
Oh yeah.
And you can see all that. So it varied with the trainers and stuff and the times. You know, early back then, what they did, now they do more now. They do more training now. But the young guys, they gotta, you know, get a fitness trainer, get them in shape. A special guy that's going to come in and know all the muscles and know all the everything and get you in shape.
No, that's absolutely true. In fact, you know, when you answer that question, basically, and again, we talked about, you know, one of the greatest, Joe Frazier, obviously, Muhammad Ali.
Yeah,
everybody remembers that bout in 72, you know, Howard Cosell on the sidelines and Madison Square Garden and all that stuff. But the thing is, basically, he was the toughest competition because he did get on the inside. He was a lot shorter than Muhammad Ali. And, you know, but the thing is, you have the arm length, right? Don't you think maybe you want to keep them away by just jabbing at them and making sure they stay out before they come in and do their damage?
Well, the short guys, you jab. This is what you do with short guys. You throw fire up high. But in your mind, you want them to go down because your next shot is going to be the uppercut. So when you're fighting a short guy, you deliberately try to throw shots up high because you want him to go low. So in your mind, you're saying, man, when you go low, I'm going to throw that uppercut. So you shoot jabs or you throw the right hand high real hard, and he's going to go down. Short people, they go down. So really in your mind, you're thinking about the uppercut. Not really, not just the fire that keep throwing up high.
Okay.
You just throw the fire. It's like a decoy. You throw that fire, and as soon as you go down, uppercut. That's how you fight the shorter guys. And you keep stepping back because they all in your chest. Through the whole fight, they're in your chest. Like Dwight Muhammad Qawi, Joe Frazier, a lot of other short guys, they put the pressure on you because if they stay on the outside, you can eat them alive. So that's them. They have to get it inside and do the damage or else you can pick them off on the outside. And that's what Ali did to Frazier. At one point, he started picking them off on the outside.
Wow. Well, that's.
But remember when Joe Frazier knocked him down? Remember Joe Frazier knocked him down? He was inside.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, Joe Frazier just kept coming. And he reminded me again of Rocky Balboa, who doesn't exist. It's a fictional character. But the bottom line is he got inside. He stayed inside. And for whatever reason, even though Muhammad would pull him, you know, push him away, get away, you know, and slugfest with him, he took more damage than Muhammad Ali did. I'll tell you one thing. I don't know how he kept coming after all those shots that he would do. You were more of a finesse type of a fighter. You know, you basically pulled away, you know, you did your jabs, you know, you didn't go slugfest, you know, with anybody. You basically kind of had, I wouldn't say Muhammad Ali style, but you had a style all your own. Tell us about that style.
Okay, no, Muhammad Ali was a dancer, Muhammad Ali danced around and he countered on you, throw a punch, he'll move out the way and hit you with a punch. I was taught by a trainer named Slim Robinson, who taught me how to move my shoulders and miss punches. And he taught me a good defense, which a lot of boxers don't have today. You don't see a lot of defense today. And I emphasize a lot on defense because I was taught defense, how to do that. They call it the Philly shell. It's a tight defense that you have. Now the boxers are day, you don't see them. See, the old trainers, a lot of them passed away and left their knowledge when they went. But my trainer, he taught me, but he passed away too. But I'm one of the last guys to have that knowledge. Nowadays, like you saw the Bud Crawford fight and the Spence fight, neither one of them had defense, but they was all offense. I know both because I got a chance to be taught by one of the last old timers that taught you everything, not just offense. And if you watch If you remember the Spence and Crawford fight was just recent, and Spence lost by knockout, neither one of them had defense. Neither one of them had defense. And nowadays, when you see these young boxers, a lot of them don't have defense, you know, and they don't know there's a guy like me sitting around waiting that could help them. Now, they just, there's a fight that with Yusef and this guy, DeBosey from England, they just fought.
Okay.
And they gave me a call wanting me to maybe try to work with this kid, DeBosey, because they knew I have a good defense. But defense is a problem these days. And if you look at a lot of footage, guys, you'll see that a lot of the boxers today don't know how to shell up and block punches and counter back. So you catch the punch on your arms, then counter back. Now the guys are just getting hit.
Well, I'll tell you something. They'll be lucky to get you. I hope you're getting top dollar for your work there, my friend, because, you know, you got the goods. You really got the goods there. So,
the thing I'm looking at is box is so bad. You see that top dollar thing? I know the money going to come once they come. They hire me and Tyson Fury and them, their family was reaching out to me to come over there just to be a part of something in Saudi Arabia. I have to call them. We have to call them back. I have to call them back and see what's going on. Like Tyson Fury, his defense is grab and then hit you, grab and hit you. He wouldn't look more prettier than that, you know? He wouldn't look more prettier than that by keeping your hands up and getting in close. If you notice, Tyson Fury grabs and hit, and then he steps back.
Okay.
So he's a good boxer, but if he don't need to get changed because he's successful. But if he get in a fight with somebody that's throwing multiple punches, yeah, I can help him out also.
You know, and the funny thing about Mike Tyson was he's a lot smaller than you. He's a smaller guy, but he had power. I mean, his punch, how is that possible that he could have so much thrust, you know, or, you know, going for him when he's not as big as you or some of the big guys that actually fought? But he had knockout power. I mean, it was just absolutely amazing. So,
he just had the strength.
Now, listen, when we get back, because we're going to be taking a break in a second, I want to talk about you being a sparring partner for Muhammad Ali, which is absolutely an amazing story. So we'll be back with the former boxing champion and fantastic person, Timothy Witherspoon, right after this. Each year, 5,000 people, including children, choke to death. LifeVac can stop these senseless tragedies. It's so easy to use also. Simply place the mask over face, push, and pull. You'll never regret having a LifeVac in your home or office. Please visit LifeVac.net today to protect you and your loved ones. Or you can call them at 877-LIFEVAC. That's 877-LIFEVAC.
Mr. Rogers said, look for the helpers. Can always find people who are helping. Thank you to all the first responders who put their lives in danger to help us when my brothers and sisters need them. We look out for the helpers because they look out for us.
Thank you, first responders!
Thank you, first responders!
Help us help first responders in your community today. Go to firstrcf.org to learn more.
We are back with Live on Tape with Pete Tribuca right here at WWDB AM 860 Talk Radio, Philadelphia, a Beasley Media Group station. We are talking with boxing great, boxing icon, Timothy Witherspoon, Philadelphian, who we love to have on the show, basically. You know,
Terrible 10,
man. And I tell you, when I met you, and I met you several times, you're not terrible at all, man. You're like a piece of bread. In Italy, we always used to say, if we get along with somebody, it's like having a piece of bread. You're a piece of bread. Everybody loves bread, so you're like a piece of bread. It's hard to believe that you're actually a killer. You know what I mean? Because you're just so nice. Oh, go ahead.
But you don't have to be. You don't have to be. Real quick, you don't have to be. You don't have to be like Tyson was like really ferocious and aggressive. I didn't have to do that. I had finesse. I would be real nice to you and knock you out. I mean, you get a lot of respect that way too. So I didn't have to approach my opponent like that. I approach them in a nice way, then knock them right on out. But some people need to be aggressive. Some people need to be aggressive. You have to ask them why they had to do that. But I didn't have to do that. Use finesse and love, then knock them out. Yep.
Hey, Tim, while this thought just occurred to me, going back to Muhammad Ali, did you ever see that film? I think actually Will Smith portrayed him like doing like kind of like a film Ali, where he played Muhammad Ali, or maybe
I think it was just called Ali. The movie Ali.
A little bit of it. I watched a little bit of it.
Yeah, it probably didn't do him justice, did it? Probably.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've seen it. I've seen several different movies of Muhammad Ali. You know, I was his sparring partner. I was really cool with him when we sparred. I did a couple of personal things for him. Like when I was up the training camp with him, he thought that his wife was like not being honest with him. And me and another guy named Aaron Snowwell, who lived up in Pottsville, which is like 7 miles away. I was up there. I was Ali's farm partner. So, you know, when everybody finished training, they would go down to this little club called the Alley. And so he thought that Veronica Porsche was maybe like flirting with these guys and stuff. So he told me and Aaron Snowwell to go down there. We was like spies. So me and Aaron, after the workout, me and Aaron Snowwell drove down to the Alley. We drove down to the Alley, and so we went into the club. There's a lot of people in there dancing. So we went in there, and we saw her with the guy. So we ran back and got Muhammad. I feel bad because I like Veronica, too. I've never seen me and her cool. But we was doing what Ali said. So we went back and picked Ali up in the car. It was just me, him, and Aaron Snowwell. We drove him to the club. And then we got the club. He said, find her. So we went around. We found her. So when we found her, we said, Ali, there she is over there. So when he walked down with all the people in the middle, they parted up like Moses. You see the movie when Moses, the water opened up?
Yeah, that's right.
They parted up just like that. And then at the very end, Veronica was dancing with the guy.
So
I felt bad. So we got back in the car, drove back up to the camp. And I felt bad after that because I heard that he took the belt and maybe hit her on the leg about 3 or 4 times.
Oh, my goodness.
Then the next day, we sparred with the guy. We beat him up. Ali beat him up, and he left the camp in sparring. So
now we can give you a new title. Here we go. You're going to love this, Josh. Here it comes. I see a TV show out of this, okay? It's going to be Tim Witherspoon, P.I., you know? Private investigator, you know.
Oh no!
I could just see that. It'd be like a nice little television show. Tim Witherspoon, PI. Go ahead.
You actually just reminded me. I remember watching Robert Urich as Spencer when they did that TV series based on the Spencer novels. And I remember, like, in the opening credits, you saw one little scene with him, like, in full, like, boxing outfit, like punching the bag or doing the runs and like training.
Talk about Muhammad Ali.
You got it.
Yeah.
Okay,
Now, you were a sparring partner for him, and those were his big fights, too. Larry Holmes and Trevor Burdick.
He was sick.
Those were the ones.
He was sick.
Yeah, and you basically, I think you said something like, I don't know if he's ready or if there's an issue or something. And
It was. When I was sparring with him, I didn't feel no pressure. I didn't see, he was like weak. I was hitting him to the body because it was easy to hit him in the head. So I went back to the corner and told my trainer, I said, something wrong. And he said, yeah, Tim, I noticed that in a couple of days now he hadn't been doing anything. So cut that short. When we flew to the fight site in Las Vegas, we sparred with, we knew he was weak. But then I found out that he was sick because I wanted to go home. It is young kid. Just getting into boxing. I don't want to be out there in Vegas. The average guy wouldn't want to be out there partying. So I wanted to get my ticket home real quick. So I went over to Caesar's Palace where Larry Holmes and Muhammad Ali had their room. So I went up on the floor and I started walking down the hallway to go to Harold Bingham's room to get my ticket to go home. There was all fighting in the room. There was all arguing in the room about whether he should fight or not. Here I am, this young amateur kid. I'm like, whoa, I can't believe it. So I stayed near the door where they was arguing. I saw Ali sitting on the bed. I think he had a towel over his shoulder. Uh-huh. Drew Bandini, Angelo Dundee, they was all arguing about whether he should fight or not. I'm witnessing something that's really I said, whoa. So I'm saying, I said, oh, God. And Ali's sitting there like a little baby, like with his head down and all that. So I went down to Harold Bingham's. I said, man, I got to go home. Can you get my ticket ready? Everybody was all drawn out. They was like, I was like going back and forth with them. I said, okay. They said they'd get my ticket. So on the way back, Ali was sitting on the bed. There's arguing back and forth. He shouldn't fight. He said, yes, he did. He's okay. Blah, blah, blah. So I ran. I left and went over to the Dunes Hotel. I was telling all the sparring partners, Ali might not fight, man. They talking about he weak. I saw everything on hand. We thought he wasn't going to fight. But then when the first bell rung, we knew he wasn't going to win the fight.
Yeah.
When the bell rung in that first round, we said, whoa. Because we knew he was sick. So Larry Holmes got cheated out of the chance of fighting the real Muhammad Ali. He got cheated.
Yeah.
Ali was sick.
Yeah. Well, that does happen. That does happen. But let's get to you now. I want to get to you, okay?
Oh, okay.
I want to get to the disputed bout that we all got to go to. This is before you became WBC heavyweight champion on May 20th, 1983. And I remember that, okay? You have your first attempt at earning a world title by taking on the recognized top man in the division, of course, and that we're talking about the Larry Holmes. At the Dunes Hotel, by the way, in Las Vegas. So it's the same place where Muhammad Ali fought as well. And from what I remember, you really were rocking him badly before losing a disputed 12-round split decision. Okay, now,
yes.
Why do you think they gave it to him over you? Because I think it was totally even. I mean, I think even in some cases you probably have more points. But is it because
I think I did, yeah.
Yeah. So what is it like? Tie goes to the runner. You know, basically, if you're a tie, you go to the heavyweight champion. Or how does that work?
Well, I think that they knew that his goal was to try to reach Rocky Marciano's record. And here, who is this young kid, Tim Witherspoon, from South Philadelphia? Who is this? Who is he? He doesn't have enough wins. Notoriety. A lot of people don't really know me, but they're starting to. So I think it was a close fight. I felt I won. But Larry Holmes is trying to reach Rocky Marciano's record.
Okay.
And I think that was one of the main things, reason why the judges gave it to him. They gave it to him, but I believe I won. I believe I won, and I think the reason why they named him, nobody knew. They knew me. They knew me coming up, but they was like, "Nah, I don't think I did enough to dethrone Larry Holmes." So that's what I think. I think it was them not really knowing. If I'd have knocked out a couple of guys before that, and they would have probably said, "Oh, he's the new champ. Let's give it to him."
Yeah.
But I think they wanted to see more of Larry Holmes trying to reach Rocky Marciano's record, so wrong time.
I tell you one thing. It's difficult. Do you have a question there, Josh? Or,
no, I'm good. Keep going.
Yeah, no, it's really difficult because you know when you get to like subjective things, like when you watch ice skating, okay, and the Russians against the Americans and whatever, and then you see somebody from wherever, you know, some small country in the middle of nowhere, they do as well, if not better. And all of a sudden, they get lower marks. It's like, how is that possible? Like, you know, I remember one time the American fell on her butt, and she ended up getting a silver medal. And there were people behind her that didn't fall. They had some high stuff, and they ended up doing it. So that's the one thing I don't like about boxing is it's very subjective by the judges, what they're looking for. And, yeah, I'm assuming that they gave him the benefit of the doubt. But your time did come, okay? You obviously went up against Greg Page in 1983, and basically, I believe Holmes relinquished his WBC, I guess, rather than defend against Greg.
And you know, real quick, I shouldn't cut you up, but I was going to tell you.
Oh, no, please.
Larry Holmes was tired of fighting the young guys like me, David Bay, Greg Page and all that. So him and Bob Lee, who was the president of IBF, but they created the IBF because Larry Holmes didn't want to fight no more of those young Turks like me, Greg Taylor. Yeah, so that's how the IBF was created, because Larry Holmes wanted to try to reach Rocky Marciano's record, but Don King put them these strong young kids, and so Bob Lee was going to look out for them. So that's how the IBF was created, because Larry Holmes didn't want to fight no more of those tough guys. He wanted to reach Rocky Marciano's record.
And you heard
about the IBF, right? You know about the IBF.
I do. And I think Josh had a question, right? Did you have a question?
Okay.
Remind me again, what is IDF? Because you just lost me there for
IBF,
a second.
IBF.
Okay, the WBC, the WBA, and they made the IBF. That was the newest boxing, championship that you could. The IBF, I think the International Boxing Federation. So it was the WBC, was the World Boxing. Oh, you got to find that out, guys. I just won the belt. The WBC, WBA, and the IBF. IBF was created because I heard Larry Holmes didn't want to fight no more tough guys. He wanted to get an easy route to Rocky Marciano's record. Bob Lee was. Yeah, that's what happened. That's what I heard.
Now, did you notice the similarities between Rocky II when Mickey's now giving them all the good people, because Mr. T, it wants to fight, was it Trevor? No, what was it? I forget the guy that he played, but...
I think it was Trevor. Yeah, you was right. Yeah. I think it was Trevor something.
Trevor something or other. And he's like, I gave you all these easy ones because I want to keep you there. I don't want anybody to hurt you. So, yeah, that's pretty interesting that they followed suit with Larry Holmes. Okay, so then you fought. You fought Paige.
I did a good job.
You beat the heck out of him, man, I tell you, you know. And the good part is you won. You became a champion. You earned that, because the IBF was like the International Boxing Federation. I don't even know if that's still around. I don't even know at this point. But I think it is. Yeah. But I do know that the really big ones, the ones that were most important back then, you won both
WBC.
Of those. Okay, you won the WBC. Now, in March 9th, 1984, okay, that's a year after you won your title. Unfortunately, you got involved with promoter Don King, okay? That was probably the one thing that I guess you probably regretted doing, was getting involved in that. So tell us a little bit about...
What happened was, let me explain what happened. I was with my manager, Mark Stewart. I had a manager, Mark Stewart, and there was like four other guys. It was Larry Levin. If you ever heard the name Dr. Snow, he was the dentist that was selling drugs.
Yes.
Larry Levin was a real nice guy. All the boxers, we didn't know they were selling drugs or kilos, and we got sold to Don King. After that was Mark Stewart, Larry Levin, and this David, this dentist. And they were selling drugs, but we didn't know it. We was living in Center City on Spruce Street with singers. It was a building, big tall building. So the boxers, Vernon Hopkins, Uncle, Sterling Quick, we was all in Center City. And they got busted. And when they got busted, we got sold to Don King. So that's the results. That's the results of the situation. We had to go to Don King, and several of us, went with him, and I had a brother that was 13 and with 13 knockouts. He didn't go, but the rest of us went. That's how I wound up with Don King. He gave me that fight, not nobody else. Don put me in there with Larry Holmes and the other fights. So when you in that ring, if you got to be on Don King's side, or else you're going to lose.
Yeah, I'm assuming he was a powerhouse when it came to promoting. So, yeah, unfortunately, you had to deal with the devil a little bit, in order to get the deal. We are talking with, former heavyweight champion and just a great guy who still is in great shape, by the way, boxer Tim Witherspoon, Philadelphian. And we'll be back with Live on Tape right after this. Each year, 5,000 people, including children, choke to death. LifeHack can stop these senseless tragedies. It's so easy to use also. Simply place the mask over face, push and pull. You'll never regret having a LifeVac in your home or office. Please visit LifeVac.net today to protect you and your loved ones. Or you can call them at 877-LIFEVAC. That's 877-LIFEVAC.
They came from every corner of the country, from small towns and big cities. But they all shared one thing in common. They belonged to a family called Marines. A tough and determined few dedicated to protecting everything we hold sacred. And still, they come. Celebrate the history of those proud few who have earned the title Marine.
And welcome back to Live on Tape with Pete Tribuco. And we have got, former boxing heavyweight champion, Tim Witherspoon, and just an amazing guy, has got WBA title, 86, the WBC title, 84, hung around Muhammad Ali. How cool is that? Okay. Was a sparring partner, was the PI also, the private investigator for Muhammad Ali. I mean, how many people can actually like say that, you know, in addition to everything? Lived in Philadelphia, in South Philadelphia. When you think of Rocky, you got to think of Tim Witherspoon, because believe it or not, Rocky must have taken a lot of stuff from you, as well as Chuck Wepner, in order to make that incredible series of movies, which we got. Basically, we've got you here. So now you won the title, okay? Unfortunately, you didn't hold it that long, but you hold it long enough. What was that like, trying to hold the title? And how hard is it to hold a title when you got it? So, you know?
Well, you know, at one point, Don King was trying to get Tyson on his side. So, if you didn't really cooperate with Don King, you know, he pretty much he didn't care. He just get another guy in there.
Sure.
For instance, when I fought Frank Bruno in England,
okay.
I'm on an airplane flying over there, and I'm the champ of the world, and I don't even know how much money I'm getting. So I'm flying to Wembley Stadium, flying to England to fight Frank Bruno, not knowing how much money, I didn't know how much money I was getting until I came back to America. So when I knocked Frank Bruno out, in Wembley Stadium with 65,000 people screaming and shouting, I didn't know how much money I was getting. So, and they kept me over there, sent everybody else home. This is when I knew something was wrong. They sent everybody else home and kept me and my kid's mother there 2 days, a couple of days after they sent them, sent everybody else home. So I thought something was wrong. So when I got home, I went to go get my pay. They said, Tim, well, you had half a million, you had 500,000. Carl King's get half, that's 250. He said, you had a whole bunch of bills. You had a whole bunch of bills, and I rounded up with 90,000.
Oh, my goodness.
No, 100 and maybe 15. So I paid everybody. I said, man, I still got to pay everybody. I can't shortchange nobody. So I went home with like $90,000 for fighting Frank Bruno. He went home with $1.5 million. I went home after knocking him out, going through all that stuff, $90,000.
Wow.
Frank Bruno. $90,000.
Yeah, and you recorded the technical knockout with him as well, and Wembley Stadium, that holds like 150,000 people. What was that like to actually box with so many people watching you? I mean, it's not a small little place. This is the real deal, man. Wembley Stadium.
Yeah.
What was that like?
Yes, it is. Man, let me tell you something. I came from Philadelphia. I wanted all my people to be everybody. I have Irish friends, Italian friends, Jews, everybody. I just wanted everybody to be proud of me. That's what gave me the energy to win. Going over there, knowing that I came from a great city, knowing that I had people behind me, good or bad, I never had them behind me. I wanted to go over there. I wanted my mom. I wanted everybody to be proud of me. I wasn't scared. When I walked out there to that into that stadium, I was like, man, I'm ready now. This is my day. This is my time. I said, man, this is it. Most guys would be nervous, But this was my opportunity to win everybody's heart. And I went in there and did it. And when I went back home, everybody was, man, I couldn't believe that. Well, I didn't get a parade, but I wish I would have got that. But when I just knew I came from a great city, people that loved me, and that's what pushed me. I knew people was behind me. They wanted me to win. I wasn't scared. Most guys are coming in with all those people, you know, and I was happy. And when I walked out there, if you watch that video, I was ready to go.
Yeah.
And I caught him with that overhand right. It was all over.
Yeah, but you know, it's a shame that you know you didn't be able to get as much money as the person you beat.
Yeah.
Okay. And you know, I'm assuming at that point, basically, did you get any like endorsements? Like, did anybody like you know? Because I don't remember that much with you with endorsements, like you know, for Nike or anything along those lines.
I think the promoter and the manager, I think if they pursued it, they probably got the money if I wore anything from it. Nobody never talked to me about that. Oh. I didn't have a representative. The representative was Don King's son, Carl King. But before that, it was Mark Stewart.
Okay.
He was going to try to get anything he can. He treated us good. But Dennis Rappaport, who was Jerry Cooney's manager, I had went with him. He treated me like a champ. He gave me $50,000 bonus. Then he gave me $100,000 bonus when I was with Dennis Rappaport. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dennis Rappaport, I had went with him at one point. He treated me like you're supposed to get treated, man. And man, that I wish I was with him in the beginning.
Now,
if you remember that name, Dennis Rappaport, who was Jerry Cooney's manager.
Oh, yeah.
He treated me like a king. He would send people to the camp to make sure that I had everything I needed. He would send, if you needed money, he would give it to you. I wish I had met him in the beginning, man. I would still be, I would still be champ, but. he treated me like he's supposed to, man. I was like, I didn't know how to act.
Yeah.
You need this, Tim. Tim, what you need? Tim, what you need? I was like, golly. And I realized it afterwards. I didn't, some of the fights I lost, I didn't train hard, not realizing this guy is behind me 100%. And then I apologized to him when it was over. I said, you know what, Dennis? I said, I'm really sorry, man. I was abused in a boxing game, and I didn't really know who really cared about me. And now after it's over, I know that you cared about. I apologize to him, and we keep in touch all the time now. So all those other guys that had me out there, Mark Stewart and everybody that was off on the money, Dennis Rappaport, he was behind me 100%, man. And I feel bad, and I apologize to him. I said, man, some of them fights I didn't train hard, and he was behind me 100%, man.
Yeah.
And it always is always on my mind, too. I said, man, you know what? If I would have trained hard for them fights, I probably would have really, really did even, you know, really good, you know. So Dennis Rappaport was the man.
He was, but you know, but I'm looking over here. And by the way, Don King did eventually settle with you for $1 million, basically because of those situations. So
I can tell you about that quickly if you want.
Oh, sure. I got about a minute and a half, but sure.
Okay, we can't do it in a minute and a half.
Well, I'll tell you what, just do the best you can. Just give us a short version.
Okay, so the settlement, I didn't want the settlement. I didn't want the settlement, so I went home. I was mad. I went home. I said, I don't want the settlement. I want to take them all away. I'd rather lose than and all that. So then I realized something wrong because nobody contacted me. So I called the people, said, look, I'm going to take the deal. So I took the deal because I didn't know what was going on. My lawyers didn't call me. Nobody. So I got scared. I called them. I took the deal. It was what I went home with. But they gave me pieces, 250. 3 months later, they sent me this. Yeah, so, yeah, we settled it, but I just want to take Don King all the way to the end. Win or lose, I don't care.
Well, that's the way you are. I mean, you're a fighter, you're a competitor all the way, and, you know, incredibly talking to you. I love talking to you, Tim. You're the greatest, man. I know Ali's got that title, but to me, you're not terrible. You are one of the greatest. And we've had Tim Witherspoon on, former boxing champion. And of course, he held the WBC title and WBA title several times and just a great career. Thank you so much for being on. We're going to be leaving. I think Josh got one question real quick, but we only got about 30 seconds. So Josh, go ahead.
It's been great having you on. I actually just wanted to say I kind of threw Pete for a curveball because when I was giving him how much time was left, I was trying to wave the white erase board like the pretty girls do in the boxing rings. But thank you so much, Tim.
Thank you. We got the legends now. We've taken care of all the former boxers, guys.
Yes.
Okay, just look on YouTube.
We got
the legends now.
Thank you so much.
We got all the former boxers.
That is fantastic.
We're trying to help them.
Well, you know, and it's true. We got to do that. Concussions are a big thing, and there's nothing together. So we'll definitely look into that for this. And thank you so much for being on, Tim. You're amazing. And that about does it for Live on Tape with Pete Tribuco. And we'll talk to you again next week.
Yes. Thank you very much.